Close My Eyes from Modest Yahoo, who's joined us today on the World Cafe. And, you know, I talk to a lot of musicians in their 20s. And quite often they don't have much of a story to tell me because, you know, I formed a band in my high school. We got a deal. We made a record. But I'd love it if we could kind of learn a little bit about your journey, because in the period of time that in your 20s, you've really certainly gone through an incredible experience. First of all, where did you grow up in White Plains, New York?
Yeah, that's right.
Now, what were you like in high school?
In high school? I'm trying to think of an actual experience to give an example or something, but what is it like? When I was about halfway through my freshman year, I wanted to have dreadlocks, so I was trying to do everything I could to get dreadlocks. I wasn't that patient like most teenagers. I didn't have any type of patience, so I was doing all kinds of interesting things to try and clump my hair together, you know, messing with it and just tying knots in it, and I tried everything, dipping it in rubber cement, you know. No, seriously, in high school, I was a little bit frustrated with the system, and to me, there's a line, actually. We're recording a new album, and one of the songs on the new album is all about youth and rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
And the basis for it I got from the Rebbe, in Lubavitch Rebbe, has a whole talk that he gave about this, where he says specifically something like, the youth, just like the body rejects poison, the youth reject the hollow spirit of emptiness or falseness or something like that. And in high school, I felt like really agitated that, you know, I had to spend all this time and your whole life doing what someone else feels you should be doing, and spending your time learning and educating yourself in classes and things that you don't necessarily might be giving you the truth in life. And so, without being able to define what it was that was bothering me, so I was sort of like, you know, a little bit of a rebel.
Well, as the rabbi says, you weren't alone by any stretch of the imagination, right?
Right. No, there's always tons of kids like that.
Yeah. And you dropped out of school, or you left school?
Something like that. When I was 17, I went to like my first day of senior year and said, it's not for me, and left with a friend in his Volkswagen bus, red 1969 red Volkswagen bus, and with a bag full of quarters, and went to Burlington, Vermont, to live in the park.
That sounds kind of fish oriented.
Yeah, that was the idea. That's what we were going after.
Now, were you religious at all in high school?
No, I wasn't.
But you ended up taking a trip to Israel. How did that come about?
This lady came, you know, I was in a Hebrew school that I always grew up going to. And some lady came one year and said, there's a program, you know, you can come to Israel for 4 months during the school year. So I wanted to go to Israel, and I also wanted to miss school for 4 months. And, you know, while I was there, I was almost tossed off of it like the third or the fourth day, but then ended up staying, Divine Providence. And while I was there, I had a very intense experience, you know, and really mind-opening, really without any drugs, you know, at all at that point, and just naturally kind of in. It really steered my life to sort of search for that.
Do you remember the circumstances of that? Where were you?
Yeah, I remember there was one, you know, specific circumstance. We'd been in Israel for a few days, and it didn't really hit me. Or, you know, I was in some other place, and then they kind of sprung it on us. We went to Jerusalem, to Mount Scopus, and it was during the sunset, and they were watching the sun setting behind the old city. And I just felt like a real fullness that I hadn't felt, a very intense kind of almost like a calling or like something internally, something that was definitely above nature, above the normal physical day-to-day stuff. And ever since that happened, then that was like, you know, going for that, you know.
But when you came back, it must have been, I mean, that sounds pretty intense. It's a little difficult to come back to kind of secular life here and keep that going. Was that always...
Yeah, that was it. That was really tough, because it was coming back into high school and being around friends that were just really, you know, they were nice guys, but they were into, you know, drinking and smoking and hanging out, and no one really wanted to hear, you know, anything about spirituality or God or Judaism or anything like that. So then it became like trying to find and search the people who are the ones that are into this, and where are the places and whatnot that I can go to try and have this. And the closest thing that I had when I came back from Israel was that winter I met a friend who had been in that Israel trip in Boston, and we went to the Centrum and went to a Fish concert. I had some of my first experiences in that environment. That was like the closest thing. Huh.
So there's a spirituality to the whole Fish experience, but the leap for me is how you got from there to reggae and to a pretty deep understanding of reggae, and I'm curious where that came in.
That was sort of like the whole way along from the time I was about 14. So I was listening to Bob Marley, really, and that was like the initial real attraction to reggae. And I don't remember exactly what and when and how it happened, but you know, I just remember that I felt a certain like strength in what Bob Marley was saying and in the music, and I related it to myself. And mm-hmm. you know, people always ask, well, how could you know like a white kid from the suburbs relate to this rebel music from Jamaica? And it says in the Torah that words that come out from the heart enter the heart. It's a matter of recognizing truth. And when a person comes with something very real, no matter who the person is, where they are, when someone picks up on that, recognizes it, then it resonates, you know?
When people talk about your influences, they talk about Bob Marley and they talk about Shlomo Carlebach. Tell people who he is and what influence he has on you.
It was kind of a very short period of my life, but a very kind of intense period of my life, which is when I was first becoming religious. I was in the New School in Manhattan. I was really searching for it, and just anywhere I heard there was a synagogue or a class or something, I would just go for it. I would run for it in the same sort of way when I was trying to break into a Phish concert, the same kind of fire. And somehow, some way, I stumbled into a Carlebach shul. There was a rabbi named Shlomo Carlebach, who was actually one of the first emissaries of the Lubavitch Rebbe, and then later on to kind of do his own thing, and started a shul on the Upper West Side. And he was also a musician and very talented, very simple and very, but from the heart, you know, and the music really was beautiful music. And you would go into this shul. I went in and people are dancing and banging on the walls and singing. And, you know, it was like really almost like, you know, you wouldn't expect it in a church. It's kind of like a hippie Orthodox Judaism.
You're going to do the song Exaltation next. What is this about? And what I'm curious as to where your lyrics come from. They come from texts. They come from what are they about?
Well, it depends. Like the first song we did, Close My Eyes, those lyrics came from just, you know, just writing really out of nowhere, just kind of. And this song, Exaltation, a lot of these lines are coming from the Tehillim and from the prayers, and I just kind of reshape them so that they rhyme and stuff. But not, you know, that's this song at least. And then the end of the song kind of breaks into this chant, which is Shebane Beis Hamikdash, which means to rebuild the temple speedily in our days.
Which is the temple in Jerusalem.
Which is the temple in Jerusalem, which is the concept of you know, world peace and God being really revealed in every person and in every world, in this world and in every physical place. And that's sort of like in the grand scheme of things in the Torah and in Judaism, that's really the aim. That's what we're looking for.
This is Manas Yahu live, and this is Exaltation.
Heavens rejoice on the earth, will exalt, and now you come swing back like a catapult. See, and its fullness will roar. He gives our help and our shield, our soul. Yours for the Lord, burning, God of Jacob, everlasting strong. Down the door and get on back no more. Wait all night long until the early morning. Night night watchmen wait for the dawn. Exaltation, my God of salvation. I feel that the wind will be filled with jubilation. The Lord reigns to be proclaimed. Diggy diggy up, oh. Exaltation, my God of salvation. I feel that the wind filled with jubilation. The Lord reigns to be proclaimed. Sting eternally, everlasting, rejoice in the name of His Majesty. So we sing a riggedy bamba, yo. Oh, exaltation, my God, of salvation. I feel that they've been filled with jubilation. The Lord reigns for be proclaimed. Riggedy, oh. Exaltation, my God, of salvation. I feel that they've been filled with jubilation. The Lord reigns for be proclaimed. Praise to the King, for He's alone exalted only. Perform mighty deeds and making new things, sowing righteousness and creating healing. He spoke and a valley came into being. To the master of praise, renews each day, redeems and saves. Continuously blessed is his name, making way lights, creating luminaries, abounding in mercy. Won't you grant me understanding to perceive all your teachings in your Torah?
Modest Yahoo playing live today, and that is Exaltation. And you should introduce everybody in the band. This is a great band you found.
Yeah, these are guitar players Aaron Dugan, bass player Josh Werner, and drummer Jonah David. And these guys all went to Manus School for, I think it's called School for Jazz. It's at the new school. It's a music school. And I met Aaron because I went to a different sort of section of that school. We were sort of friends. After I went to yeshiva and became religious, I wanted to start doing music. So that was like the only guitar player, I think one of the only guitar players I knew, and called him up.
I'd like to kind of take your spiritual journey a little bit further from where we kind of left off talking about it, because it's one thing to embrace Judaism, but it's another to get in as deeply as you have into the Lubavitch lifestyle and where you study in Crown Heights. How did coming from Shlomo Carlbach's kind of hippie shul lead you to where you are now?
There was a few things, but one thing was like I was becoming religious. I was wearing yarmulke and doing taking on different things, but nothing that was really outside of the. Of the norm, like I said, it fit with who I was, mm-hmm. and so in the certain parts of myself that were not you know, improving because I was still within my own boundaries. So I still felt this heaviness that I wasn't like breaking free and growing from the things that I was trying to get out of. And one day I was like really down about it. I was sitting in the park in Washington Square Park, and I saw, you know, these little like kids playing with blonde hair and like, you know, these little Orthodox like Hasidic kids. And I sort of like walked over. The rabbi was this like very eccentric kind of like guy and very charismatic, and also had followed the Grateful Dead, and you know, was like a, you know, ex-hippie, but here he was like very religious. The next day they invited me back that night, and one of the things there is that you dance with the Torah. So I came back and we were like dancing around Washington Square Park with this Torah, and these guys that were there, they were totally, you know, Hasidic, black hat and everything. And, you know, one of them had followed the Grateful Dead. The other one had gone to my Hebrew school that I grew up going to and also, you know, followed Fish. And the other one was also someone who had become religious later. And it was like, oh, like all of a sudden it was like that boundary kind of went away. Like, oh, you don't have to be this or this. There's a, and I always felt like, you know, from the time I was around 16 years old, that God was always, you know, putting things in my face to show me, as I was thinking like, okay, so what is this all about and what's going on here? Things started to open up. And then one thing led to another.
Modest Yahoo live on the World Cafe. We have more coming up as we find out the one thing that religious law has hindered Modest from doing in his live shows when we return to the World Cafe. We're back with our guest, Modest Yahoo, and his band. I think any of us, upon meeting a devoutly religious person, wonder how their faith reconciles with the sometimes decadent world of rock and roll. And I asked Modest Yahoo if there were ways in which his faith hampered his rock and roll lifestyle.
There's only one law that's really has held me back from something I really love doing, which is stage diving. You know, because like at one point, I don't know when it was, but we were doing shows, we were touring around, and at some point, like, I just, you know, the energy level gets to a certain point and you can't sing any louder, you can't do anything. And like the only thing you can do at that point is jump off the stage into the audience, and it like boosts the energy, you know? And so I just started doing it without really thinking that it might be breaking some rule, because obviously there's a law men and women can't touch. And knowing there's women in the crowd, but somehow I just like put that in the back of my mind. It was like one of the only times I've ever really taken a law and just... And so I started doing it and got used to it. And then in my own mind, I was thinking like, oh, well, the people that carry you are really only the men, because the women probably aren't up front like that. And then my wife was the one that pointed it out to me, like, you know, you can't do this. There's women touching you and grabbing and all kinds of stuff. So I can't go. So I asked the Rav about it. And at first the Rav said, oh, it's not a problem. And I don't think he really understood what it was. And then my wife, who's much more religious than me, talked to the Rav and said, oh, do you know what's happening? You explained it to him and then shot down. So I can't, that's one thing.
I've seen you pogoing in the audience, though. You've gotten out there with...
Yeah. That I think that's allowed.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. You've played, I've looked on your website, you've played a fair number of shows in temples, and then you play nightclubs. And what's it like playing in a temple with a largely Jewish audience?
Well... At this point, we're playing pretty much only in nightclubs. And when we first started, obviously, because of the nature of the thing, there was a lot of organized synagogues and whatnot that were interested. So we were doing it. It's interesting. Like, you know, it's always interesting to play in different types of venues. And when we were on tour and playing five nights a week, and you know, you play like three nights or four nights in a club, and then you show up expecting the club, and it's a synagogue, and everyone is sitting down, and it's like a totally different thing. And me personally, I don't mind it. I like the change of pace sometimes, mm-hmm. and it's a different type of thing, you know. The audience isn't as much into it necessarily. It's more of a show, and you know, it's a different type of people are maybe a little more focused. So you're dealing with maybe more focused energy, and you can kind of direct it.
Would they get your message better though? Would they know the text that you, some of your songs come from, or not necessarily?
I think some would claim to, but yeah. I don't think so. I think, like, you know, we have such a wide span of audience, and I think probably everyone in the audience probably would claim that they get it more than the other right. person. Like, probably the people, the reggae people would, you know, would say that they understand the message more, and the, you know, Orthodox would say, oh, but what about these words that they don't know? And, you know, kids that relate to it, you know, feel like the songs are written for them. So
you seem to really encourage as wide an audience as possible.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Now, before we began, you were, everybody was set up, we're doing a sound check, and you were studying. And here it is. It's Friday, and we're just a couple hours away from the beginning of Shabbat. What will your next 24 hours be like?
Well, unfortunately, my wife is, well, not unfortunately, but she's pregnant, and she's staying in New York. So I'll be separate from her. So I won't be, like, you know, totally happy, but it's Shabbat. So basically, the guys will drop me off at the rabbi's house, and I'll put on my Shabbat clothes. You know, it's a nicer kind of clothing. And hopefully there's a mikveh in Philadelphia that I'll be able to jump into first, which is like a sort of like a public bathhouse. It's kind of like a ritualistic water that you jump in, go into and cleanse yourself. And you come out from the mikveh and you put on your nice clothes, and then you go to synagogue and pray kind of a short service and have a long meal with the rabbi's family and any of the community that comes. And hopefully I'll learn with the rabbi a little bit and pray and eat and not pick up my cell phone or not, you know, get in a car and turn on a TV. Not that I turn on TVs anyway, but it's just like total separation a little bit from the world and more focus on spirituality. And at first, to me, this was like hell keeping Shabbos. It was like It was like the lack of movement and the lack of, you know, energy sort of was like depressing, you know, like, oh, you have to sit here, you have to do this, you know. And now it's like, it's the opposite to me. It's totally revitalizing. So,
and then you'll finish up and you'll do a show.
Yeah, then I'll come right from there and do a show. And those usually are my best shows, right after Shabbos.
Keep that in mind, people. This next song you're going to do, King Without a Crown, has just about everything you do in it. It's a great song. Tell us what the song's about.
Basically, a king without a crown, like a person that's trying to live like a king, or trying to, you know, like any kid, you know, who's a teenager is trying to find themselves. And when I say a king, just meaning with confidence, you know, and when a person has sort of like an internal strength, a character, when they've done things, real things in this life and in this world that are positive and good, then they have that to fall back on. And that's like the crown. And a king without a crown is someone that wants that and is missing it. And they don't have the crown, and therefore it's like, they don't have the kingship either, you know, the confidence.
And then you can hear that all in the lyrics of this. This is King Without a Crown.
Let's go. slave to yourself and them don't even know. The man has lived a fast life but your brain moves slow. You can try not stay high, you're bound to stay low. You want God but you can't afflate your ego. You're already there and there's nowhere to go. Your cup's already full and it's bound to overflow. If you're down in that water and you can't stay afloat, ask Hashem for mercy and I'll throw you a rope. You're looking for help from God, say he couldn't be down. Searching up to the sky and looking beneath the ground. Like a king without his crown, you keep falling down. And I really want to live but can't get rid of your frown. You're trying to reach onto the heights and round down, bound on the ground. Keeping up your crown, then you earn a smile. Out of night comes day, out of day comes light. Now I find to the one light, sunlight in a ray. Making room for his love, a fire can blaze. Make room for his love and a fire can blaze. Watch this needy man up with a hole in the ceiling. Give myself to you from the essence of my beginning. I sing to my God. Healing, I want Mashiach now. Time to start confusing. Watch the speedy man up over the skylight in the ceiling. Give myself to you from the essence of my beginning. I sing to my God.
Modest Yahoo is our guest today on the World Cafe, and that is King Without a Crown, another one you'll find a live version of it, live at Stubbs in Austin, Texas. I understand you're working on a studio album.
Yeah, we're now in the studio.
Has your studying with the Lubavitchers helped your writing?
Yeah, for sure. I take, a lot of the, concepts and a lot of the concepts were sort of similar and a little, like, more underdeveloped things that before I became religious that made sense to me and that I followed. But since I, started studying with Lubavitch and it's called actually Chabad, which stands for the three levels of the intellect in the person. The idea being that when a person really, really, gets into these concepts and learns them in and out, and spends time meditating on them and thinking about them, that it will actually, change the way they see the world. They'll actually see the world through different lenses. And therefore, the music that comes out and the writing that comes out is all coming through that filter.
I don't know if this is something you've thought about, but what's your goal with the music? I mean, when you consider Christian gospel music or actually other religious music, a lot of it is just celebration and losing yourself in the music, a lot of trance music and things like that. Is your goal to turn people on to the religious aspect of it, or what would your goal be?
Really, the main goal is just, like when I was a teenager, struggling and trying to find truth and trying to find myself and trying to find something to connect to. The musicians and the music that I listened to was really what saved me in a big part through that time and what helped me to really keep searching and really looking for truth. At the end of the day, that's really what I'm trying to do, to provide that for kids and also to really put my ideas out there as to what is positive and what is not, because along with, a lot of the music and the things that I was into, there was also a lot of negative entities that were tied to that. And therefore, as a kid, you see stuff and it's very hard to decipher. You know, it's all or nothing. It's this whole thing must be good. And so you know, I try to put that out there and be really like, you know, music is the type of thing that takes people out of their mundane life and they put it on and they come to a higher place. And that's really what I'm really trying to do.
Modest Yahoo and the band playing live today. The current album, Live at Stubbs, is available at our World Cafe CD store on your web browser at worldcafecds.com. Thanks to Modest and the band for joining us live today.